You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, MahoganySilvering.net. Henry Santana, a misunderstood millionaire with a playboy reputation, will do whatever it takes to transform historic Newport, Rhode Island's waterfront into the world's largest five-star resort community. Victoria Hathaway, an introverted bookseller, is fearful of losing all she holds dear, a thriving business along Newport Harbor and her multi-generation colonial home that stands in the way of the resort community. Sparks fly when Victoria meets Henry, a handsome stranger, until she discovers he's the one who is threatening to take her land. Desperate and determined, Victoria struggles to save her home and her livelihood while ignoring her growing attraction for the man who threatens to destroy it all. The Prodigal's Desire, Book 1 of the Seaside Desire series by author Valerie Lynn. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. Tuesday, A Paranormal BDSM Romance by Mahogany Silvering. Keiko Reed finds what she never expects in the arms of a werewolf Daddy Dom, an alpha of the Worst House MC. Fleeing her abusive ex from a rival MC, she runs into Gerald Brothers. He takes her under his protection and believes she is the one that he has been searching for. He claims her in every way and gives her the sacred bite of the werewolf. Soon after, he is betrayed by a club member to the rival MC, putting not only Keiko, but the club and the small town of Golden Tip, Colorado, at risk. Will Gerald go to war with the rival MC, risking everything for his precious little one? Wolf Daddy, A Paranormal BDSM Romance by Mahogany Silvering. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net. Hello, good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silvering, and we have an awesome, awesome show for you tonight and a real treat. You get to actually hear the real Wolf Daddy from the book Wolf Daddy that I wrote. And he's also the cover model of the book. So welcome to the show, Mr. Gerald Brothers. Say hello.
I'm here. Hello.
Okay. Are you excited to read tonight?
You know, I am, but probably for the first time in a very long time, I'm a bit nervous as well.
Oh, well, that's natural, but I think you'll do great.
I think I will, too.
Okay, so let's get the reading started. We are going to start with the preface. So, take it away.
A Daddy Dom is foremost a Dom. He chooses a subcategory of Daddy within the lifestyle of dominance and submission. A Daddy Dom does not promote incest or pedophilia, a common misconception by those outside of the kink community. Since this is typically a Dom subconstruct, there is usually a sexual component. But sex is not the largest factor or the motivating force in this type of relationship. The Daddy Dom usually believes in his girl more than she does herself, and often uses the wisdom of his age to see her not only for who she is, but also for who she can become. He accepts her for who she is, flaws and all. He is the protector of his girl against real or perceived threats, dangers, and bad people. Sometimes a daddy may have to act on his protective instincts. No one can mess with daddy's girl. A daddy dom is a confidant, protector, teacher, guide, anchor, and disciplinarian.
I am yours, and you are mine. As we lie spooning, I feel your breath on my neck, sending tingles down my spine. I am yours, and you are mine. Your hand travels below my waist, forcing my legs apart, your cock swelling against my lower spine. I am yours, and you are mine. Your fingers circle my most intimate parts, and I moan, pushing back against you. My hips grind. I am yours, and you are mine. Heat floods my body, warming my skin as you kiss my neck, sliding your fingers inside my sweet honeypot you find. I am yours, and you are mine. I orgasm, you push me on my back, opening my lips. Inside me you slide, so divine. I am yours, and you are mine. We move together in our own rhythm and time. I am yours, and you are mine. I shudder and come screaming your name. You bite my neck growling, you're mine. Yes, my darling, I am forever yours, and you forever mine. Prologue. Her heart and mind race as she speeds into the woods, the frosty night air like daggers piercing her lungs with each breath. Has she run far enough? No. She has to keep running. She needs to get at least to the cabin she spotted a few weeks ago. It's only 2 miles away. Somewhere he can't find her. Tonight was the only time she could get away. He didn't lock her in for the night, and she took full advantage. She loved him once. No, it wasn't really love, though she tried convincing herself that it was. Feeling like she was getting too old to have children, she rushed into marriage. However, he has gone too far, feeding her and keeping her locked away at night. She had trusted him, believed he loved her and cherished her. Now she feels like a fool. Her safe word doing scene play meant nothing to him. He didn't stop. He refused to stop, pushing her well past her limits of pain. Submitting to him had been fun before it slowly turned into a nightmare, one that he would not let her escape from. Hickel's body is riddled with bruises and swelling. She can feel her legs getting heavy, her left side throbbing from the kidney punch she received only this morning. The right eye, though healing, is not pain-free. Still, she continues to run until she spots the cabin a few feet away. She stops suddenly when she hears voices. A man and a woman are sitting outside the cabin in the backyard, a warm fire burning in a pit in front of them. Okay, pull yourself together, Keiko. They look like nice people. She takes a deep breath in and lets it out slowly before moving in their direction. She spots the man first, who is staring intently as she approaches. He smelled her long before she appears before him. She smells of fear and desperation, and she's human.
Human.
Her dark brown almond eyes seem to call to him, though she has not uttered a word. He is immediately captivated. Despite her disheveled appearance, he is quite skillful to him. His eyes soften as he studies her intensely for another moment or two. He sees the look of pain and fear, but the determination on her face moves him. He observes the bruises on her face and neck. A look of concern washes over his face as he moves cautiously toward her, feeling immediately protective. Whoever hurt her is going to pay with their life.
Do you need some help, little one?
He asks, his voice clear, strong, and full of compassion. Little one? No one has called her that since her grandfather. And when he was alive. She nods, moving unconsciously toward him. In front of him, she stops short. Keiko can see and hear his breath, his kind eyes glowing a neon blue in the moonlight. She wants to throw herself in his arms. However, she resists the urge, thinking it would be crazy to hug this stranger. He could be abusive too, though she doesn't sense that about him. In his presence, she no longer feels cold. He seems to generate some type of heat she feels all the way to her core. Her breathing changes, and her lungs no longer feel pain with each inhale and exhale. Keiko's heart beats faster again, this time not from fear. Her body throbs with excitement and arousal, making her panties wet. She questions her sanity for a moment, but can't deny her body's response to the fine man in front of her. She moves even closer to him, and he instinctively wraps his arms around her. His scent, a warm blend of earthy cardamom and coriander, sends tingles to her body. She relaxes in his warm embrace. Who is this man? And why does he feel like home? Chapter 1. Gerald Steely Blue. He races up the snowy mountainside on his vintage 1951 Indian Chief Fire Engine Red motorcycle. The freedom of the open road thrills him. Unlike most bikers that prefer Harleys, Gerald Brothers, a.k.a. Steely Blue, prefers vintage Triumphs or Indian Chief motorcycles. Playfully known as Prez Blue to his Wolfpack and club members, his hair is strawberry blonde. Though he shaves his head bald and smooth, his neatly trimmed beard is reddish-brown with spots of white and blonde. His baby blue eyes turn arctic blue in his wolf walk. Lightly tanned skin is beneath the blonde hair on his forearms. However, his chest bears patches of dark fur that make a line down the middle past his navel. It is the same dark fur as his wolf form. His black leather vest, which he wears over black and red plaid heavy-lined jacket, proudly displays his Wolf's House club patch. His stone-washed bootcut jeans fit comfortably over his lean, muscled legs. Blake Weasel Mason races up the mountain on his black Kawasaki Ninja 300 behind Gerald. He is a young prospect and the submissive of Gerald's old lady, Cassie, a.k.a. Queenie Claus, for 2 years. Try as he might, he can't beat the alpha in an out-and-out race, though he clearly has a better bike. However, he is not a mile behind him either. His listless, short on the bottom, long on the top, dirty blonde hair is smashed underneath his metallic black helmet. His ocean blue sea green eyes with flecks of apricot narrow as he concentrates intensely, determined to catch up. Blake looks up to the club president for the most part, but still can't resist the urge to try and one-up him every now and then. Gerald has been a fatherly influence in Blake's life, and he respects that somewhat. Although Cassie is the main focus and influence in Blake's life, and no other woman will ever take her place as far as he is concerned. Gerald is the alpha wolf of his pack of werewolves and the club president of Wolf's House MC, a brotherhood of werewolves, some born and some made, or turned by a sacred bite. There are no humans in the NC except for the occasional human women who hang around the club in the hopes of becoming an old lady of a club member and eventually a werewolf. Gerald has not always been such a level-headed and strong leader. His tortured past led him down a dark road until he met his Luna, the alpha female of the pack, his wife Cassie. He met her at a turning point in his life. They were a good match, it seemed, but they are both dominant, and dominance needs submissive for balance. However, Cassie already has her advantage. She is an unconventional first lady who challenges the club rules about an old lady having a second man in her bed. It drives Gerald crazy, but he loves her, and she convinces him somewhat to be polyamorous. He set boundaries like no sex in their bedroom, and she can only have scenes with Blake when Gerald says she can. She doesn't even consider Gerald as a possessive man who truly desires a woman who only wants him. He's had one or two submissive women in his life, even a trans woman in the past, but never for very long. Not having an actual connection with either of them, the DS relationship ends, especially when one became very jealous of Cassie. For many bikers, it is not unusual to have more than one old lady, and in that respect, Gerald is quite different. He needs and wants a baby girl submissive on his own, someone he can care for belonging only to him, someone who loves and serves only him. If she were human, he would offer her his bike to become his in every way, including becoming part of the pack. Many of the club women vie for the chance to serve the alpha as his submissive, but none ever come close for what he seeks. Pain sluts are great, but he wants no needs more than that. His little one needs to be intelligent and attractive, able to hold his attention both inside and outside of the bedroom. Inflicting pain is a great release for him, as it will be for his submissive, but it is also a primal urge, something he needs desperately. Pain is not all he wants to give, however. He has a big heart and a capacity to love. He wants something special, someone special, a submissive that needs him, a much deeper connection than he ever had before. The problem is finding it. There were a few who came close, but none had exactly what he wants, much less what he needs.
Does such a person truly exist?
He wonders. Gerald makes his home just outside Golden Tip, Colorado, deep in the foothills. The cabin on Golden Tip Mountain, his second home, he built with his own two hands. He's quite proud of it, from the warm and cozy interior to the strong and sturdy outside that keeps out the cold in the winter and the heat of the summer. Colorado has always been his home. Though his childhood grew up with abused parents, he turned out pretty well. He has his run-ins with the law now and then. However, he always learned from his mistakes and worked hard not to repeat them, at least not get caught. Not always happy and sometimes complacent, he leads his close-knit pack of wolves with a firm hand and tough love. In his younger days, he was more of a hellion. Though not a fan of school, he loved to read, and he often cut history class to sit and read in the library. His father was constantly called in to discuss his son's behavior and absences. Becoming a career criminal to make ends meet, he yearns for a more legitimate life for himself and his family. KB's most wanted letter on the run, changing his name and getting a new security card. The DEA eventually got him, but could never make the charges stick. They found no witnesses and no evidence in the raid on his house. He was tipped off by someone who worked for the DEA, and he moves everything out of his house and leaves Colorado. When he is freed on a technicality, he settled back in Colorado 5 years ago. He loves working on cars, buses, bikes, and any engine, really. He breaks down the parts in his head and sees what needs to be done to fix or enhance whatever he is working on. He wants more than just a hustle for his family and his club of werewolves. Many of the members are runaways or other lost souls he encountered in life and or in jail. His family comprises two beautiful grown daughters, Kate and Brianna, from his ex-wife in Boulder. He loves his daughters and will move heaven and earth for them. However, he is the last of the males in the brothers' bloodline. Neither he nor his brothers have a son to carry on the brother's name. He honestly believes it just isn't in the cards for him. So he accepts it, and as time goes on, he pushes it to the back of his mind, just like Pope grooming his baby girl submissive, is slowly fading. Things have become rocky lately for himself and his wife Cassie, especially where Blake is concerned. Gerald accepts Blake, but sometimes jealousy will creep in because Blake is 21 years old, energetic, and sometimes bratty, and Gerald is 39. Cassie is a beautiful, tawny brown-skinned woman, 30 years old, with captivating onyx eyes and a charismatic smile. Standing only a little over 5 feet with luxurious breasts and magnificent curves, she is a dominant force of nature and the only woman who can bring Blake to his knees. Blake lovingly refers to her as fun size to his 6'7" frame. He worships the ground she walks on and wants nothing more than to be hers for the rest of his life. Gerald knows Blake makes Cassie happy, and her happiness means a lot to him. Therefore, Blake has become a part of the family. However, being a part of the club or the pack is another story. For Cassie's sake, he makes Blake a prospect, testing him, sending him on crazy errands, and giving him wild tasks. Blake, however, is undaunted and likes to poke the bear with Gerald, just to get a rise out of him. He respects Gerald, wanting to be like him, and at other times, wanting to take Gerald's place with Cassie. Gerald and Cassie even separated for a few months, with Gerald only staying at his cabin. Blake moved into the house with Cassie, trying to fill Gerald's shoes, but he failed miserably. Eventually, Gerald returns to the house, still in love with his queen, and they had only just begun repairing their marriage by staying the weekend in the mountains at his cabin. They are outside sitting around the fire pit when Gerald smells someone in the woods. When she appears, his heart thumps heavily, drawn to her immediately. She was injured, having been beaten, with a look of fear in her beautiful ebony eyes. The fear in a submissive's eyes usually excites him. However, this one alarms him. He wants to rush to her and hold her, comfort her, and protect her. She looks young despite her shoulder length, salt and pepper dreadlocks that surround her lovely face, glowing softly in the moonlight. Perhaps she is in her late 20s, he surmises. Young people are always dyeing their hair different colors. He sniffs the air again.
She's human.
She's curvy, with a smaller waist and thick thighs. Her faded, dirty blue jeans fit her nicely, revealing the swell of her hips and her round bottom. Her medium-sized breasts move up and down with each breath she takes. The patches on her jacket look familiar. Narrowing his eyes, he reads,
Cerberus, MC, property of Charlie B.
A low growl leaves his throat. She locks eyes with him, unable to look away, and his blue eyes soften. Has she heard his growl? They move toward each other as if on instinct.
If her old man messed her up like this, he is going to fucking pay with his life.
Gerald swears, his wolf rising. Keiko stops just short of him, his glowing eyes causing a stirring inside of her. It isn't just fear, but arousal too.
Do you need some help, little one?
He asks cautiously, sensing her fear. Keiko looks shocked at his words, but she nods. She is even more beautiful up close. Her beautiful reddish with golden undertones bronze skin is smooth despite the bruises. Her lips look soft and inviting to him. She stares at him, reading his face, and then she smiles. Gerald can't resist any longer. He pulls her cold body into his arms and holds her gently. He wants to kiss her pain away, but doesn't want to frighten her even more. Though he is taller, her 5'7" stature means he does not have to bend down to kiss her. Her body fits perfectly against his.
Mine,
he whispers in his mind. She is a stranger to him, and yet she feels so familiar and right in his arms. She smells of light perspiration, warm vanilla, cardamom, and clove, and the sweet heat between her legs. makes his cock twitch in his jeans.
Is this her? Is this my baby girl?
So many questions run through his mind, yet he feels the pull he feels is similar but stronger than the one he felt with his queen when they met.
Yes, she's mine, or at least she will be.
After what seems like forever, he releases her and looks deeply into her eyes that shimmer like pools of darkness in the moonlight.
What's your name, baby girl?
He whispers. Keiko, she says softly. Keiko Reed. Chapter 2. Keiko. Keiko clasps her arms around Gerald's waist, her head pressing against his chest. She doesn't want to pull away.
Keiko, that's a beautiful name. Where is it from?
Gerald asks, pulling away to look at her face with a warm smile. Keiko feels his smile from the top of her head to the soles of her feet. She feels his warmth wrap around her like a heated blanket. It's from Japan. They stationed my dad in Okinawa when I was born. The family joke is the name belongs to his girlfriend there in Japan. She replies with a giggle. She can't seem to help it. This man makes her feel something so deeply, a feeling she's never experienced before. Gerald chuckles.
Nice to meet you, Keiko. I'm Gerald, Gerald Brothers, and this is my cabin. I am the president of the Wolf's House MC. My pack calls me Blue, or Prez Blue. But you can call me Sir, for now.
Yes, Sir. Of course, she says awkwardly. He's definitely dominant. But how does he know I'm a submissive? Impressed that he senses she is submissive, she doesn't really mind calling him Sir. She wants to call him Daddy, since he refers to her as Little One. But they are not in a DS relationship, and doing so now would just be awkward. Though she feels a powerful urge to do so, she resists. Gerald feels like home to her. She inexplicably feels safe, and since this cabin is hard to find, unless you know where to look, she knows Charles won't find her here. She found it by accident when she was exploring the woods a few weeks ago, after giving one of Charles's wolves the slip. Keiko's life has always been full of dominant men. Her father, stepfather, bosses, old lovers, and even some friends. Several of them have used and abused her. Her intellect intimidates most men who either want to possess her or control her for their own gain. Her father, Elliot Reed, is in law enforcement with the Denver Police Department and is currently on a DEA task force, the very same task force that hunted Gerald 10 years ago. Elliot was not around much for Keiko's formative years. Her parents divorced when Keiko was barely a toddler. She met her father for the first time when she was 6 years old. Taking with him immediately, she cried for weeks after he left and never returned until her late 20s. Raised by her single mother, Brenda Reed, until she was 15 when her mother remarried a man named Sidney Chambers. Keiko has a visceral reaction to him at their initial meeting. She senses his deception and fears she is in danger. She voices her feelings to her mother, who dismisses them. Sidney will never be good enough for her mother, and as far as Keiko is concerned, he will never measure up to her father. Proving her right, Sidney destroys her innocence, taking her virginity and telling her that's what fathers do. He explains fathers are the first love in their daughter's life, and that he is married to her mother and her. Her mother walks in on them once, seeing Keiko in tears and fighting back. Instead of protecting her daughter, she becomes angry at Keiko and jealous. Praying her mother will stop him, she tells her mother what her stepdad has been doing, expecting her mother will believe her now. Instead, she is met with disdain, envy, and spite each day after that. When she can no longer take it, she runs away to live with her mother's best friend for her last 2 years of high school. Elliot's work is dangerous, and when he is on undercover assignments, Keiko would not hear from him for months at a time. The waiting drove her crazy. When she becomes old enough to date at 16, She only dated boys in college or older. After high school graduation, she enlists in the U.S. Air Force like her father did. After 4 years, she leaves military life and enrolls in college with the GI Bill. Keiko earns a Bachelor of Arts degree in Business Administration. While in college, she has to move back in with her mother until she can work and afford a place of her own. She is humiliated and fearful in having to go back. Her stepfather immediately begins to come to her room again each morning after her mother leaves for work. Though she is a young adult, the fear of him remains. This time, she doesn't fight, though she is a former soldier trained in hand-to-hand combat. She lays there, frozen, reverting to her 15-year-old self, tears sliding down her cheeks from closed eyes. Dissociating from herself, she goes to a peaceful place in her mind until it was over and he left the room. Then, as if on autopilot, she would shower and start her day. This went on for several years. Keiko spoke to no one about it, fearful that she will be judged by friends, family, and coworkers. After all, her mother didn't believe her. Why would anyone else? Instead, she locks it away. It becomes an old wound that doesn't heal. She convinces herself it is better to just suck it up until she has enough money to move out. She becomes a police officer in South Central Texas, following in her father's footsteps. She also wants to escape her stepfather. She stays out late, sleeping at a friend's house, just to avoid going home. Ellie prefers her to become a police officer in Denver with him, where he can control her career and help her excel. Though Keiko wants nothing more than his approval, she refuses his offer, wanting to do things on her own. However, as a punishment for rejecting his offer, he angrily cuts all communication with her for a year, feeling Keiko is rejecting him. After 2 years on the police force, she goes to work in the private sector for more money. She puts her business degree and skills to work for a security company that was founded in 1850, called Pinkerton Security. She excels quickly by becoming an office manager in less than a year, then making regional manager 3 years later. Having the money to move out, she only stays to keep the peace with her mother, who emotionally manipulates her, becoming dependent on Keiko to help financially after Sydney loses his job. One day, she finally snaps, and she threatens her stepdad with a knife to his cock when he tries to enter her. Her message received, Sydney backs off. Instead, he avoids her and then picks fights with her over the most trivial of things. In her 30s, Keiko longs to get married and have children, and she wasn't getting any younger. All she ever truly wanted is a family, a normal family, who will love her no matter what, and a husband who will protect her and guide her. She dated older, established men, mostly those in law enforcement, the fire department, paramedics, or the military, anyone who was similar to her father. She longs to belong to someone, a man who was a strong alpha like the ones in her favorite books. She wants to have a powerful connection with someone. Being part of the kink community, finding a dom-sub relationship proves difficult. After meeting and going out with many dominants, she is disappointed. None keep her attention for long until she meets and dates Charles. Charlie B., a.k.a. Charles Barnett, is the most possessive and domineering man she has ever known. Charles is much older at 55 years old, and Keiko is 36. He's in great shape and doesn't really look his age. He's also a retired Army major, now in a motorcycle club called the Cerberus NC. Charles is a bad boy, dominant, who is fun, and being around him in his element is exciting to her. He's a werewolf, which makes him seem more adventurous. The prospect of becoming one herself and being part of a pack is just too good to pass up. So when he proposes, the only man to do so, she says, "Sure, why not?" Marrying Charles, she believes, will allow her to have a better life with someone who loves her. Charles is kind and generous, giving Keiko whatever she wants. He does everything for her, opening doors for her and even ordering her meals for her. He becomes involved with every aspect of her life, from her clothing and shoes to the way she wears her hair. Now, most women would take this as a red flag, but never truly having a relationship before, Keiko believes he is perfect and welcomes his guidance and instruction. She also believes women are supposed to be submissive to a man who can take control and lead. Keiko grew tired of being a boss responsible for over 400 employees. She doesn't enjoy being in control all the time. Charles's control of her frees her from most of the stress in her life. Charles convinces her to quit her lucrative job and move in with him. He promises to always protect her and take care of her. He is loving and says all of the right things. When she writes to her father about Charles, he agrees to see her and meet Charles. They fly to Denver to see her father. However, when she introduces him to Elliot, he does not approve of their relationship, saying Charles is too old for her. He is the same age as her father. Elliot also refused to attend the wedding, and his actions hurt Keiko. Keiko naively believes marrying Charles will free her from the prison that is her parents' home. However, she only jumps from the skillet to the frying pan as he controls every move she makes. His jealousy and insecurity start to show right after the wedding. Wanting the attention her father rarely gives her, she thinks she has found that in Charles. When the Cerberus MC moves to Colorado, he drags Keiko along without letting her say goodbye to her family and friends. What keeps her loyal are her vows and the belief that he loves her, even though she doesn't quite feel the same way about him. She figures love will come later in the marriage. However, once Charles realizes she doesn't really love him, he punishes her by locking her away in a room for a week and takes away her cell phone. Soon there is not enough makeup, clothing, money, or shoes that are worth the bruises, pain, the fear, or the scars. Despite her abuse, she looks great, even without makeup. Keiko looks almost half her age. While she enjoys being spanked, she is more inclined to the sensual side of sadomasochism. Charles forces her to call him daddy. It sickens her at first, treating her to the dark times and memories of her stepfather. Daddy dominants are supposed to love and care for their baby girl or boy submissive, spoil them, tease them, discipline them with love, giving them pleasure, guiding them, and be their protectors. Some things like guidance, being spoiled and protected, she never experienced with her father or her stepfather. Charles abuses her verbally, mentally, and then physically, wearing her down. His beast is more than she can handle. Even with her training, she is no match for his werewolf strength. He uses her youthful appearance, lending her to other members of the club as payment for whatever debt he owes. He pimps her out for extra money and takes all the money she earns, raping her each time she returns home, threatening that if she enjoys any man other than him, he will kill her. Keiko's self-worth and self-esteem plummet. She yearns for someone to love and to love her, but she couldn't even get her own father to say he loves her. How can anyone love her? Desperate, hungry for love, with low self-esteem, she feels weak and stupid for choosing Charles. Keiko finally has enough of him after a ruptured spleen and two surgeries on her neck and back. She could not take it anymore. She has a high tolerance for pain and heals fairly quickly each time. However, as her body ages, the abuse takes its toll and her back pain becomes chronic. He doesn't give her the sacred bite to turn her. Otherwise, she would not have had the physical issues she has if she had been a werewolf like the other wives. Charles claims she has not earned the right to become a werewolf. He continues his punishments of her for not loving him. Yet he is desperate enough to keep her, hoping she will love him. Only then will he give her the sacred bite. She cannot trust anyone in the club, and everyone outside the club fears the Cerberus MC. They become the most dangerous MC in the West. Charles lets her get anything she wants. She orders different medicinal herbs for cooking and poisonous plants, just in case. Every once in a while, she musters the courage to knock him out with belladonna or lavender, giving her a few hours of peace. Now Keiko is 40 years old, with no children, no home, and no job. She left an illustrious career to become Charles's wife. She misses being the independent woman she was when they met, dating whomever she wanted, whenever she wanted. yet letting no one get close to her heart. Well, tonight, she is determined to leave Charles, who lies passed out drunk on the bed. He and the other members would party after the weekly meeting at the clubhouse. However, this time is different. Keiko gathers lavender, which grows wild in Colorado. She dries it and crushes it into a fine powder using a mortar and pestle. When the clubhouse is empty, she spikes the house whiskey and other liquors to put the members into a deep sleep. She worries it may be too much, but decides her survival is worth the risk. She could use wolfsbane, but that would poison and kill them with the right dosage. However, she doesn't want to have their deaths on her conscience. She also doesn't want to go to jail for murder. She grabs her hidden backpack full of clothing, personal items, and hers from the hole in the back of the closet, and stealthily makes her way out of the clubhouse, climbing over the 5-foot fence at the gate, and runs into the woods. Undeterred by the cold, she runs until she spots the cabin. Then she walks right into the arms of a man who makes her heart beat faster, gives her butterflies in her stomach, and a sudden powerful urge to call him Daddy in response to his calling her Little One. He has the most beautiful blue eyes she has ever seen. She feels something so deep it terrifies yet thrills her at the same time. She wonders if Gerald is the alpha she has been searching for but can never find. Gerald stares at her for a moment longer before turning to introduce Keiko to his wife, Cassie. The women greet each other with smiles, and Keiko moves to hug her. Cassie is warm, and her dark eyes sparkle in the fire's light as she offers Keiko a seat by the fire pit. Keiko sits next to Cassie, and Gerald sits next to Keiko. The couple make her feel at home, and it isn't long before she feels sleepy, very sleepy. It is something she has not felt safe enough to do for quite some time. Gerald takes her on a tour of the cabin and shows her to one of the guest rooms that has a private bathroom. Grateful, in pain, and very tired, Keiko hugs Gerald tightly. She winces from the pain in her back.
"I'm sorry, little one. I didn't mean to hurt you,"
Gerald says softly. "You're not the one who hurt me," she whispers sadly. Gerald responds with a kiss to her forehead and hugs her gently this time. Keiko pulls back slightly to look at his stunning blue eyes. Gerald takes it as an invitation and kisses Keiko on the lips, softly at first. When she doesn't protest, his kiss grows deeper. Keiko moves her hands up his back, and he moves his hands down to rub her bottom, gently pulling her in closer. Keiko is the first to break the kiss. "Wait, what about your wife, sir?" she whispers.
"What about her? She is just as excited as I am that you are here. We're polyamorous, and she also has a male submissive."
"Oh, do you have a male submissive, sir?" Keiko asks nervously.
"No, and I had just about given up on looking for my baby girl. You're a submissive, right?"
he asked with an arched eyebrow. "Yes, sir, I am. I have had a dominant, but I just escaped from him," Keiko says sadly, looking down in shame. Gerald lifts her chin to see her face.
"You're safe now, little one. I won't let anyone hurt you. Ever. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, sir, I do." Keiko smiles in relief. "I like being called Little One. My grandfather used to call me that."
"Good,"
he replies.
"I want to get to know you. You are welcome to stay here. Would you like that?"
Keiko nods as her eyes fill with tears that slide down her face like raindrops.
"What's wrong, Little One?"
Gerald asks, as he touches her shoulders gently. "Nothing. I'm just relieved." She smiles as more tears glisten in her eyes, threatening to fall. There is something about him that calms her, makes her believe he will definitely protect her, and she clings to him, not wanting to let go.
"All right,"
Gerald replies, He pats her shoulders and moves toward the door.
If you need anything, we are just down the hall.
Sir?
Yes, little one.
Would you stay with me until I fall asleep?
Of course I will. Anything you need.
Gerald smiles, and Keiko notices just how handsome he really is. She notices his dimples as his eyes start to glow again. Thank you, she whispers, as he sits on the bed and lies back. She follows and nestles in close, resting her head on his chest. He places his left arm around her and kisses her forehead. Those forehead kisses melt inside her, and within a few moments, she is snoring softly on his chest. Her snoring sounds like a kitten purring. He laughs quietly at the image that flashes in his mind, a wolf with a small kitten burrowed in its fur fast asleep. He feels detective, who looks peaceful lying on his chest. He kisses the top of her head again, taking in her scent, but she doesn't move. She feels so good in his arms, and his strong feelings in this moment worries him a bit. But he shrugs it off. Not wanting to disturb her, he lay quietly before dozing off himself. Chapter 3. Cerberus MC. Charles wakes with a start. His head is pounding and his ears ringing. He looks around the room. Keiko! He shouts. Where's my coffee, woman? When there is no response, he yells again. Keiko! You better answer me. Why didn't you wake me up? Again, silence. Charles stands, and the room seems to shift. Where the hell can she be? He wonders to himself as he slumps dizzily back onto the bed. Charles Barnett is 6 feet tall, half Cherokee, half African-American, an MC enforcer and sergeant at arms. His brown hazel eyes are striking against his light brown skin. His lean, athletic body gives him the appearance of a swimmer. He is very strong, a powerlifter, and bests most of the club members in arm wrestling and fighting. He is fast and thinks on his feet quickly. He comes from Ozark, Alabama, and through the Army, he's traveled the world. He rubs his eyes and stands again, this time more slowly. Keiko's purse is still on the nightstand, and so is her phone. Probably downstairs gossiping with those wenches in the main hall of the clubhouse. I warned her ass to stay away from those women. When I get a hold of her, before he can finish his thought, Ike, the VP of the club, pushes the door open roughly and storms in. What the hell did we drink last night? It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he bellows. His 6'2" frame seems to tower over Charles. He is heavier than Charles with a pot belly and thickly muscled arms and legs. His smooth walnut skin is a stark contrast against his white hair and beard. His smoky eyes fix on Charles. What? 3 o'clock? Oh, hell no. Have you seen Keiko? Charles bellows. No, I ain't seen her. What'd you lose her again? Ike laughs. That's not funny. I didn't lose her. She got away from Kenny last time. It wasn't my fault. The hell it ain't. You gotta keep that bitch under control. She making you look bad, playboy. Ike teases. He loves getting under Charles' skin. He is so easily riled. Mind your own damn business, man. You ain't got no lady, no way. Keiko's my old lady. I got this on lock. Yeah? Then where's she at, though? The one thing Charles hates more than anything is someone making him look bad in front of other werewolves. Damn her. She never listens. His nostrils flare and his breathing becomes heavy as he narrows his eyes at Ike. He leaves the room without another word. Keiko has been a thorn in his side since they got married. If she hadn't been so good in bed, he wouldn't have married her. Plus, she is beautiful, but she couldn't follow directions worth a damn, according to him. She is at times too silly and free-spirited like a child for his taste. She looks good on his arm, and that's what he cares about most. Also, he wants someone to take care of him and cater to his needs. He searches the clubhouse, but Keiko is nowhere to be found. His bike is still there. She couldn't have left the compound. Someone would have seen her and would have... Why would she leave her purse and cell phone? Has someone taken her? seething with rage now. He growls angrily. She can't be gone, damn it. I should have locked her ass in the closet. Something he does frequently, just to prevent her from leaving or as a punishment for some mistake on her part. In his mind, any woman should feel lucky to have him, grateful even. However, Keiko is different. Charles is handsome and a good provider. However, Keiko's youthfulness, enthusiasm, and zest for life intimidates him. She is too smart, smarter than he is, and maybe a bit too pretty, always attracting attention wherever she goes. It makes him jealous until he finds a way to use it to his financial advantage. Still, that jealousy rears its ugly head, especially when Keiko returns home in a cheerful mood. She has tons of designer outfits, makeup, shoes, anything a woman could want. He doesn't understand why she is always trying to leave, especially in the last few months. Charles punishes her for breaking his rules by knocking her around and dragging her by her hair. He stopped hitting her in the face so much after the first time, and only because of how long it took to heal. After all, he has to protect his little cash machine. He still considers Keiko a substantial investment, regardless of the way she acts. The Cerberus Den City is the worst club among the werewolves in Colorado, receiving some national attention as well. Many of them are murderers, thieves, and drug dealers who are hot-headed, having no compassion for anyone, men, women, or children. Women were just property and assets like anything else they own. They rob everyone, rich or poor. They are only out for themselves, including a sex trafficking ring that is the largest in the state, involving several crooked police officers from Boulder to the Springs, the entire sheriff's department, a handful of lawyers, and a judge or two. Picking up runaways, young women and children of all ages left in crack houses as collateral, the ones no one will miss. Despite this, Charles never let the wolves put Keiko in the sex ring. She is much too valuable to him. The top officers are the most dangerous, deviant members of the club, ruling with an iron fist and no mercy. Luther King Russell is the founder, president, and alpha of the Cerberus NC, a psychotic killer werewolf who dabbles in everything from name brand knockoff merchandise, drugs and guns, to prostitution and sex trafficking. The only thing he loves just as much as money is Gujo, his three-headed dog, a freak of nature born to a Rottweiler, which reminds him of a Cerberus, the three-headed dog in mythology, which is also why the club's name is Cerberus MC. He is also an old enemy of Steely Blue, who stabbed him 7 times with a shank in his bar of soap after Luther came at him in the prison shower. Ike Red Dog Russell is the vice president and Luther's younger brother. He is just as dangerous as his brother, but more subtle. Stepping in is needed for his brother, as he is also the co-founder of the Cerberus MC. Darnell Hitch Brown is the sergeant-at-arms, a former bouncer and powerlifter. Noble father to his kids, but just like most of the club members, his old lady is a prostitute the club owns. Jimmy Mooney Davis, the road captain, is a highly skilled mechanic who takes care of the bikes and supervises the maintenance of the bikes during a run for the club. He is also responsible for finding new young girls and boys to traffic, taking them on runs to be sold out of state. There are 2 enforcers in the Cerberus MC, Charlie B. and Anthony Blade Miller. Charlie, being the senior enforcer, is in charge of training the patches in military combat and weapons. He is a sadistic, domineering control freak. Anthony enforces the rules of the club, and anyone that gets out of line has to deal with him. He is deadly with a sick, twisted sense of humor. Nothing is sacred to them except the club. They wear their patches proudly and consider themselves a brotherhood. Only they often turn on each other over just about anything. After a fight or two, they usually got over it, banding together to fight a common enemy. Any club that was not their own, especially the Wolves of Wolf House MC, who managed to stop their house raids or stealing back the money or items taken, return the money and goods back to their rightful owners. And that is the first chapters of Wolf Daddy. I hope that you have enjoyed that. And we have a few minutes left for any callers that may want to call in. You can call in at 563-999-3523 and press 1 for questions. So tell me, Daddy, what did you think when I first told you I was going to write this book?
Well, I was kind of in shock and disbelief, because when you told me what it was about, I wasn't sure. I wasn't honestly sure how to feel. Nobody has ever written anything like this where I'm involved, and especially about our love story.
Obviously,
it took me a little bit
impact
to get used to it. Oh, yes, it made a huge impact.
It made a huge impact.
Honestly, the first time I read it, just reading the story and seeing the similarities, it brought a lot of those emotions back to the surface.
Yes.
Very strong emotions.
I can empathize with that, because most of Keiko's chapter was emotional. Writing it, and again, every time I read it, I'm trying not to let my voice crack, because it is, you know, still very much, you know, deeply a part of my trauma. But it was therapeutic to write it. So how is it reading for you?
Honestly, the very first time I read it, excitement. Very excited at times, emotional. I even said, well, I won't say I shed a tear. I'll never admit to that, but, you know, I might have come close once or twice, I must say.
Yeah. But I was very happy to write it and excited myself. And I was really glad you liked it, because I was not going to publish it unless you gave the okay. So... yeah, there was definitely, this book was written in love, and you can find it on Amazon, or you can go to my website, www.mahoganysilvering.net, to check out the video for it and book trailer. And right now you can also get it in paperback, so... that's another thing on Amazon, and pretty soon it will be in stores like Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So,
which just amazes me.
Yes,
I'm
pretty excited. It's still doing very well.
Honestly, my dear, I'm so proud of you. You stepped outside your box, and you wrote this book, including your trauma. Stuff that is, you know, close to your own real life. And for me to see you do that, it makes me love you that much more. You are a strong, courageous woman, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Daddy.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, this has been a wonderful show for me, and reading and getting to hang out with Daddy. So, as always, I wish you all blessings, peace, and love. And thank you, Daddy, for joining us this evening.
You're welcome.
Silvering at mahoganysilvering.net. Thank you and good night.